This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 138.
Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Berners and Mark Garraway. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hi, Mark. Hi, Berners. How's it going?
All good. All good at my end. Thanks, David.
Fantastic. Thanks, Coach.
Excellent. It's been another gorgeous day here. So I'm sure I've played cricket in worse weather than this, to be honest.
So, it's been lovely.
Yeah. So it makes me think when April comes around, it's freezing cold, and you have to walk out in a woolly hat and a pair of gloves in pre-season friendlies. You could probably still be playing in November. Because down under they're going strong. They've got the Big Bash League coming, haven't they? So that's going to be quite exciting.
Warn against McGill.
I was reading about that as well, eh? Crikey. I think Stuart McGill's only going to play for one game because his body won't last for a second one. But
4 hours.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Getting all of the old players back in, and it will be quite interesting to see how they fare in that. And looking at Warnie, obviously did very well in the IPL in the first couple of years, but his effectiveness did drop towards the end of that. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes, and the likes of Matty Hayden and those guys as well.
Yeah, definitely going to be interesting. Of course, they're also playing in India at the moment. There was a bit of controversy around a team not going for a target in a domestic game. Did you see that?
Yeah, I've just picked up on it actually, because I know one of the guys who's involved in it.
It sort of
caught my eye a bit. But it sounds like an interesting way of going about things. And to me, they pulled out very early and set their stall out initially to go for the target. It was only 130, wasn't it? 130 off of 19 overs or something like that. It was very gettable. But they pulled out after 6 overs, which I thought was a bit odd.
Which game was that?
I think it was a game involving down in Goa, weren't they? So
that's
it was.
Right, yeah.
I think it was Maharashtra were playing against somebody, and it seemed like a pretty gettable challenge. They initially went for it by all accounts, and then pulled out after 6 overs. And to me, one down, which I think they were, that's a very premature end to a game of cricket that was open. I'm sure the captain of the opposition was more than happy to shake hands with him at that point.
Get Betfair on the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Have you ever been in a chase and you've been instructed not to go for it, Berners?
Not really. As I was brought up, you know, going in at number 8 and 9, we used to always play draw cricket down in Devon. So you used to have to sometimes face a barrage of abuse for kind of 10 overs as a 15-year-old, learning all kinds of fantastic swear words, which you would then take out to your mates that night. More often than not, getting hit in all body parts. But yeah, it was great for your, for me, that was like winning the game, managing to see out 8 overs or so with one wicket in hand. But normally you see some kind of disgruntled captain making some form of hand signals from the side of the field, which you don't really know what they mean until you get to the drink. You get to the drinks break and you've either screwed it up or he's waiting to rip your head off. But I think it's a good way to learn some aspects of the game of cricket, you know, often in that scenario.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with that, especially in club cricket as well, because, you're going to have men around the bat, and that doesn't always happen in a lot of club cricket nowadays, which can be 40 overs or 50 overs. But, you know, that's a pressure that people need to get used to, because it's a vital skill to be able to bat with men out of the bat and to be able to score with men out of, around the bat as well. So, no, I completely agree with that. I think you're good situations and you learn a lot about people in them.
Yeah.
I was playing in a game where last season it was. I was number 11 for the club team, and it was the last over, and we needed 4 to win off the last over. And my captain was standing next to me, and every ball that the batsman who was out there who was playing and missing it at every one, every ball he changed his mind. If you're going, Dave, go for it. Next ball, if you're going, Dave, block it. If you're going, Dave, go for it. In the end, he hit a 4 off the 4th ball, and I was okay.
Well, yeah. that's often the hardest thing, you know, is when if you're in that kind of situation, who actually calls it? What, you know, if you've got wickets in hand and suddenly you have a couple of good overs, suddenly it could change around. I've been in quite a few games where you probably have been playing for a draw, just going for a kind of, you know, resilient couple of overs, just battling back, and then some guy comes in and whops, you know, one over for 15, and you're thinking, hang on a minute, we could sneak this, what do we do, kind of thing. So I think that's quite fun as well. People always criticise that style of cricket, but if you're in that predicament, it's even more fun than a straight win-lose scenario.
Yeah, certainly in the clubs that I've played in, the philosophy has always been to go for it as long as you can, you know, even if you slightly err on the side of the swashbuckling. To go back to the original point, which is needing 130 off 19 overs, that's quite gettable in first class cricket. I mean, I know that in the match, you know, in the second innings, was 91 all out the other team. So maybe it was a bit of a terrible pitch or something. But still, it's the wickets in hand you look at, really, don't you? And you think to yourself, well, hang on a minute, have we got men down the order who can block it out if we need to?
Well, that's always the way that we'd go about it in county cricket, really, is, you know, you look at what you've got in terms of your batting order, and then you decide almost how many wickets you go to, you know, before you start even thinking about it. And that gives a clarity to the batters up the top of the order to be able to go out there and play rather than having to worry about it. And certainly that's the way that we went about it at Hampshire. And we certainly, when I joined the club, we had quite a lot of those games because Mark Nicholas was excellent at negotiating 3-day chases, whether it be us chasing or whether it be the opposition chasing. So, I mean, he was of the opinion that, you know, you might as well go down fighting and lose a game of cricket because it's the wins that give you the championship win at the end of it, as opposed to the losses. And even with the ECB putting in points for draws now, there's still, you know, you look at all of the league tables at the end of the year, it's the sides that win the most games that get up there. So, you know, I think declaration cricket is underestimated. I really do. And I think also that declarations tend to get left a bit too late. And I come from a bit of a Mark Nicholas Maverick school on that one. But I used to like setting somebody a gettable target and then just getting over the line. It was one of the best feelings in playing cricket.
Well, I'll keep my tinder dry on that one because we've got the soapbox coming up. And that's exactly what I'm going to be talking about later on in the show with declarations in club cricket. So I'll keep my opinions on that back a little bit and see what everyone thinks when I get on the soapbox later on.
Okay, an interesting topic that I thought would be relevant this week after Brad Haddin coming out and announcing that he'll continue to play in his natural way, or flamboyant style, some would say. I just thought we could talk a little bit about what actually is a natural game and how players, you know, how they end up in that kind of way of playing, or what they've done to achieve that in their mindset to kind of avoid too much interference from coaches, and particularly if they're, you know, not in good form and carrying on playing in that way, what kind of determines that?
I mean, it was an interesting passage of play, wasn't it? Because there were wickets falling everywhere, and I said at the time somebody needs to grab this by the scruff of the neck and just put the momentum back. You know, you've seen Stuart Broad do that a couple of occasions over the last year or so for England, where he's gone into bat number eight and then just gone for it and taken games away from opposition or put them under pressure again. So there's a definite merit in doing it. I think the question was that he ran down the wicket and did it was the real question, because we know that Brad Haddin is a fantastic striker of a ball. He's, you know, technically a good player, is a very good driver for a wicketkeeper, is an exceptional driver. But it was the fact that he ran down the wicket and got out in the way that he did. And to me, when you talk about natural game, that's not really Brad Haddin's natural game. And certainly third ball or fourth ball or whatever the case may be, it definitely isn't his natural game. And that was a reaction to pressure. And he'd been sitting in the changing room watching this ball dart around and obviously decided that that was the way that he had to go because he didn't trust his other ways of playing against it. And it is as simple as that.
Yeah. So it was more, his decision was more based on the scenario than his actual own style of playing, because naturally even the most attacking players in the world aren't going down the track to Dale Steyn when your team are 80 for 8 or whatever they were.
Well, I mean, I I would like to see, and a couple of years ago I'd have had the opportunity to go over his first six balls in Test cricket and how many of those would have incorporated running down the wicket at the world's number one bowler. I mean, that's not a natural game because he's never done it before. If he'd done it successfully 15 times and then got out, then as a coach, I could say, well, you know, was it appropriate in that circumstance? But you have done it. You have had success. But to me, he's not had success doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's about the context of the match situation, isn't it? You don't have to necessarily go into your shell and think, all right, I'm going to block everything for the next 45 minutes. But you have to decide the way to play that's going to give you the best level of success within what you've done in the past, isn't it? And that's what that's what I think when I think of someone's batting style. All I think of is, you know, what's brought them success in the past, and that's really it. You know, if you say wag, then what's brought you success in the past is smashing it from ball one. But not many people can do that.
And equally, as a coach of Sehwag, you could turn around and say, look, you know, you accept that he's going to play like that. And if he gets caught at third man every now and again, then you accept that because that's the way he plays. But to run down the wicket like that and to get caught behind, it didn't look good. He is under pressure as well, which I think it comes from it. And if Tim Payne was fit and didn't have his hand injury at the moment, I think he'd be under massive pressure.
This week's interview section is taken over by a former Indian Test cricketer, Akash Chopra, who has launched his online coaching course this week called Ranji to IPL Lessons from a Lifetime of Batting. And so what we're doing is, as a little taster of that course, is we're giving you some of the audio from the video that goes alongside the course. And if you're interested in finding out the rest of it, you can head to pitchvision.com/academy and find out all the details on how to learn how to apply the mental practices of an international opening batsman to your own game.
How to play one ball at a time. I think all of us have been told many a times that a batsman should only play one ball at a time, should not be thinking too far ahead of himself, should not be thinking about the innings in a whole. Instead of that, it's always advisable to just think about one ball at a time because that's what you have to face. But is it that simple? The answer to that is, it is not. Actually, you have to really practice to get into that state of mind where nothing else matters except being there, playing that one ball, concentrating, as I said earlier, concentrating, being in the present, and think about just one delivery. Because what happens is, when we talk about playing one ball at a time, we also talk about a lot of preparation that goes into an innings or a match. And when you do that, at times you end up playing the entire innings in your head before you walk onto the field. I'll tell you something about what happened with Sachin Tendulkar and his brilliant innings against Pakistan in 2003 World Cup. Sachin did not sleep for 15 nights. That's a fortnight. He did not have a full night's sleep because he was already thinking. He was thinking how to play that innings against Pakistan, how to face up against Waqar, Wasim, Shoaib, Afridi, Saqlain, everything. He had actually planned his entire innings meticulously, precisely, and he knew what had to happen. And in fact, it played the entire innings in his head. So when he walked out there, he didn't actually feel that he was playing there for the first time because he had already done it in the past in his head. But then, once you've already played the entire innings, then how do you actually disassociate or get away from it, detach from it, and play one ball at a time? So there is a dichotomy. But the fact is, yes, it is important to prepare. It is extremely important to think it through. If you know your opposition, if you know your bowlers, if you know the conditions, and if you don't know anything else, you definitely know your game. So you plan your innings thinking, these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses. I'll be aware of my weaknesses because you should not be dwelling too much on that. But concentrate on your strengths, focus on your strengths, and plan an innings around it, keeping the conditions in mind. But then once you walk onto the field, when you are there in the middle playing that delivery, I think nothing else should matter. You play the ball, not the bowler, because a bowler could be X, Y, Z, Glenn McGrath, Brett Lee, or Dave Richards, or anyone else, because you can put a name to, any name to a bowler, eventually it's that 5.5 ounces ball which you have to play. Yes, it helps when you know the strengths of the bowler, but even when you don't know, don't worry, don't think too much about it, because your reaction, in fact, batting is all about reacting. Just react to the ball, see the ball, react, and trust your instincts. Trust your years of hard work that you've done till now and go with it. Just trust your instinct, have some faith, and play the ball as you would instinctively. Because if you start thinking about it, I can promise you there's not enough time to think. Once the ball leaves the bowler's hand, when he's bowling at about 145 Ks, say, when I was playing against Shoaib Akhtar, had I thought about playing a certain shot a certain way, would have fallen flat on my face, because it doesn't work. You don't have that much time. All you need to do is to react. And how you react is on your instincts. And how you get your instincts is what you've done for decades, if not years. So once you've drilled those finer nuances of the game in your brain, in your skill set, and your muscle memory, more importantly, then everything will fall in place automatically. You see a half volley and you play a cover drive. You don't think about it, because the moment you start thinking, you'll edge it and it'll go to the slips, because your foot won't be there, your bat won't come down the right way, and everything will actually go haywire instead of falling in place. But once your preparation is pretty much in order, I think there's nothing that can stop you. Just trust your instincts, trust your practice, and go out there and express yourself.
Okay, time now for the ever popular questions section, and a couple of questions this week have been picked out by Berners. Don't forget that if you want your own question read out, then you do have a chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So the two contenders this week are chosen by Berners. What have you got, Berners?
Got a first question here from Sushama Khanna. Really important decision that his son wants to join a cricket club, and he's just wondering what kind of advice we could give him in terms of what to look for.
Well, I think the basics almost go without saying, but we'll cover them off anyway, just to make sure that everybody knows what we're talking about. When we're talking about somebody's son, it's presumably a youngster, so what you want to have a look at is what kind of setup, what kind of structure the local clubs have in the area for developing young cricketers, because some take things more seriously than others. Some have, you know, put down structures and plans to make sure that it all comes together to create top cricketers as much as possible and give players the opportunity to blossom. So you want to look at what kind of coaching structure they have and what kind of qualification the coaches who are running things have, and not only the qualifications but also how experienced those coaches are, because it's one thing having a piece of paper saying you're a level two coach or whatever it is, but it's another thing being able to put that into practice. And someone who's been coaching for 20 years at, you know, between under 13 and under 17 level is going to know a lot more than someone who's newly qualified.
Yeah, I mean, you've nailed most of it. There's a lot of accreditation schemes. ECB have run accreditation schemes and focus club schemes, so they become things that people look out for. And I know that there's the cricket development officers can advise, for each county, could advise anybody of those clubs. And with that comes a quality control, really. So certainly as a parent myself, I'd want my little lad to go into a club that, you know, is well established and has good practices of child protection, good opportunities, for them to play and develop and to enjoy themselves. And it's a safe environment for them to be. So that would be the first and foremost. But the second thing that I was going to bring up was the opportunity to actually play. So, you know, if you're 13 and you pretty much know what part of the game you're going to be playing, you know, if you're a fast bowler, there's no point in going somewhere that's got already. You want to be playing where you're going to get the opportunity to bowl the new ball. And you have to establish that one as well, really. And that can apply to youngsters as much as it applies to adults.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes in those kind of situations, it can be better not going to the big club in the area just because they've got the best reputation. It can be better going somewhere a bit smaller that can give you a little bit more attention and develop you a bit more quickly into the senior teams as well. And then you've got the chance to take the step on if you are looking at taking things seriously and turning professional at some point. I think the other thing which kind of all links together is in with it as well, with the things that we've said, is what's the culture at the club and does it match with the way that you want to play cricket? Because if you're taking things as a path, you want to develop as much as you can develop, and you have ambitions of playing professionally at some point, then there are clubs which do that better than others, and that is the same the world over. It's not just here in the UK. It's the same the world over, where some clubs are more towards the social side of things, and some clubs are less towards the social side of things. Of course, all amateur clubs by their nature are social. Of course, they are. But some of them take things in terms of planning and organisation a little more seriously than others, where it's just guys having a bit of a loaf and get out of going shopping with the wife on a Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. Good tea, flat deck, short boundary.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because my dad was a fairly good cricketer, but the first thing when he used to come back through the door when I was very young was tell me all about what tea he had. So that's probably pretty relevant as well.
Yeah. Before you joined us on here, Gareth, we used to often have some quite in-depth conversations about our tea on a Saturday afternoon at the various outgrounds we used to frequent. And I think we should have a Scotch egg competition. We can literally all bring something to the table every week.
Well, literally have a bake-off.
Have a bake-off, yep.
Well, mate, just because I'm here, don't have to stop any of that practice at all. I'm more than happy for that to continue.
Oh yeah, definitely. Teas are a crucial part of it. You always say, don't you? Well, at least it was a good tea. Win, lose or draw, at least it was a good tea.
Don't go and play in Australia. They don't give you anything.
Well, it's just uncivilized, isn't it?
Okay, next question from Naveen Madhav, who's got a very relevant and interesting question here regarding some tips to stay calm and relaxed at the crease. Often one of the biggest worries for players, certainly of an amateur level, is getting anxious and getting shuffly at the crease when they come into bat.
Well, yeah, I mean, concentration is something that affects everybody, really. But the thing to remember is everybody has a finite amount of concentration. It's really how you spread that out over the course of an innings or a game, which gives you the best chance of being successful. And you look at somebody like a Jonathan Trott, and obviously he's got a very pronounced routine that all the commentators pick up and talk about and people comment on. But that's all part of his method and methodology of maintaining his concentration. He finds a way to switch off and to take in all of the things that happened on the previous ball. And then he finds a way of coming back in and making sure that his focus is purely on one thing, which is probably going to be what that ball coming down and then being able to react to that ball. So I think routines are massively important. There's lots of things that go on around us, around a cricket match and each ball that we play. But the best players find a way of getting down into just concentrating on one thing. And if you talk to most of the best players, from Justin Langer to Robin Smith to Michael Vaughan, it's the ball that they concentrate on at that key moment in time where the guy's running into bowl. So routine is massively important, and don't let anybody tell you that being like a Jonathan Trott or having a very designed technique of your own to get yourself into that position of facing the ball is a bad thing, because it's certainly not.
He used to have a player at our club, and he used to talk to himself as the bowler was running into bowl, and he used to talk so loud, he used to actually put the bowler off, and the game used to come to a standstill, because he used to say, why is he talking to me? We can't talk to him. And what he was saying was, as the bowler was approaching a delivery crease, he used to literally shout, watch the ball, move your feet. And he said it very, very loud. So the bowler used to say, look, I don't like him doing this because I'm concentrating as much as he is. And it used to put me off as well, actually, because I used to think, I wish he would shut up. OK, you can think that in your head. But I guess for him, it was to say it out loud, and it really made him concentrate and do what he was trying to do, which was watch the ball and move his feet.
Yeah, I mean, that's an extreme method. But and I also play with a guy at Hampshire called Paul Whittaker, who was a very gritty player. But a spinner, in particular a leg spinner, he would pick what ball they were bowling and would shout it out as it was being let go. And people used to think that he was being cocky because he could pick spin, whereas some of us couldn't do. But actually what he was doing was really keeping his mind alert and awake and making sure he was concentrating. So, you know, there's different ways of doing it, but your routines are huge, really. Robin Smith was a fantastic player, as we all know, and he used to have all these things to walk away from the stumps, do a couple of stretches or whatever, come back in, and he'd tap either side of the batting crease, and then that would be his cue to get his head back on, and it's just about the ball now at that point. So it's all about routines. The other thing I would say is anxiety doesn't always begin out in the middle. Anxiety can begin back in the pavilion or even in the week leading up to a game. And relaxation techniques, using your breathing, as I've mentioned before on the show, can help to bring that anxiety down. And even when you're out in the middle, you can do that as well. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, Somerset used that within the 2020 competition in 2005, because we realised it was a frenetic game and the guys would be under pressure. But if you used your breathing well, then you can often, you settle your nerves down, settle your anxieties, and then you can concentrate on singular things.
One other thing that I go back to quite often is something that Jeremy Snape said to me once, which is that your confidence is like a bank account, and you make deposits into that bank account with regular practice.
This week's soapbox is going to be the coach. Go for it, coach.
Well, one of the ongoing things of the Pitch Vision Academy that I've been talking about for years is declarations in club cricket. I mentioned it before, and I'm of the opinion, in club cricket particularly, that too many captains play safe these days, and that is the problem. That's the reason why declaration cricket has started to die out in the club game, and people are going to 50 over cricket, because captains are so fearful of losing games that they bat first and they pile up a huge score that the opposition don't even consider getting if they lose some early wickets. And so they shut up shop and you get a boring draw and everyone says, "Girl, that was boring," and nobody enjoys themselves. And, you know, if you're playing club cricket, it's as much about enjoying yourself and having a good close game of cricket. And often that means taking a risk. It doesn't mean doing something ridiculous like declaring too early, but sometimes it means declaring a little bit earlier than you think you might. And so the opposition think, "Well, hang on a minute, we can get this," and they go for it. And when they go for it, you know, in order to go for it, they have to start playing their shots. And if they play their shots, then they're going to start losing wickets. And if they're losing wickets, then you're going to win the game if you bat first and field second. It takes a little bit of bravery to do it for the first couple of times, but if you can do it, if you can say to yourself, "Okay, we're going to declare a few overs earlier than half time, we know what this wicket's like, we know what the opposition are like, and we know what our bowlers are like," then go for it. All right, if you've got a bowling attack who are much stronger than the opposition, then maybe you can get away with setting a big total, but knowing that you can bowl out batsmen who are intent on blocking it out for 50 or more overs. But if you haven't got a bowling attack, if you think your bowling attack is the equal of the batting attack, then you've got much more chance of winning the game if you have the opposition batsmen going for the runs. And the other advantage of doing an earlier declaration is that your own bowlers think you've gone a bit mental and will try that much harder to try and win the game for you, because it's the only way that you're going to get out of this alive is to win the game. So look for those early declarations, those sporting declarations, and make club cricket a lot more interesting.
I like it.
Strong opinions, and you know, I can see both sides of it a little bit. And I have to say, as I mentioned earlier, I'm from a bit of a maverick school of declarations, having watched and played a little bit with Mark Nicholas, who was very good, particularly in the 3-day cricket era of negotiating opportunities for results in games of cricket, not just for Hampshire, but for the the opposition to have a chance of winning as well, which is what it's all about. And it's gone a little bit from the professional game. And I sense, talking to people and watching games of cricket in club cricket, that it's gone a little bit out of the club game.
Oh,
so, it's a real shame to me, because you get some great games of cricket out of giving a little bit to get quite a lot, potentially.
What do you think, Bernard? Declarations or limited overs? Or as long as the tea's good, you don't care?
Nah, not that the tea's good. Not limited or restricted or whatever. It's just got to be finished by 6 o'clock on a Saturday evening. It's got to be finished by 6 o'clock on a Saturday evening. That's my weekend. And you always get stuck in traffic. It's all about the time duration for me. I think there should be a cut-off period. And if whatever the time, whatever the result or stage of the game is, if it's not finished, tough luck. You're all going home. Rip the stumps out the ground and go home.
Well, I don't know if it's still played anywhere, but we used to play years ago, especially on a Sunday when it was just friendly games. There was no limitation to the overs until the last hour when it was 20 overs.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Well, at least you knew where you stood then, didn't you? That's a typical declaration structure, is 20 overs from 6 o'clock, and you kind of try to make it as friendly as you can amongst that. But yeah, I don't mind a declaration game if it's one of these friendly games against the Hampshire Frogs or whatever it is, and you bat first and you bat.
sorry, the Hampshire Frogs.
I'm sure there's a couple of touring teams that we used to play against, and it's like a legion of old dentists or something like that, and used to bat for about 70 overs, score about 570, and then give them about 15 overs at the end to try and wangle.
No, that's not declaration cricket, Murders.
That's good fun, that is.
That's no fun. You've got to give them a chance.
I played for a side called the Devon Dumplings. Have you heard of them, Gareth?
Funnily enough, mate, no. But I have heard... that I have heard of the Hampshire Hogs, who play at Warnford. But that sounds very good. That's a good one, mate.
Okay, so that's all we've got time for this week. But before we go, we've got to decide on a winner for the prize for the questions that we had before all the madness when we started talking about declarations. So, Gareth, which question did you prefer this week?
Well, I think they were both really, really good questions, because they affect everybody. But, you know, when you're starting off in cricket, you do want to choose the right club for you. And I think there'll be lots of people listening to this that is pertinent to. So we're going to go for that first question about choosing the right club and what helps you to choose that.
Congratulations to Shashma, and hopefully your son will find a club that allows him to flourish and play at the highest possible level. And don't forget, if you're listening to this and you've got a burning question about cricket, whether it's playing or coaching, then we've got somebody here to answer your question from Bernard's vast experience of enjoying teas across the south of England to Mark Garroway's international coaching experience. So it's the entire gamut here, and you can send in your question to us and you can win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, what's the ways that people can get in touch with us in order to win that prize?
You can give us a quick ring. The number is 02088167691, or drop us an email, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
Our Twitter is PV Cricket Coach. Our Facebook exists, it's Pitch Vision Academy. You'll need to do a search for that. And if you want to listen to this show every week and enjoy the banter and get some exciting and detailed cricket coaching information every single Friday, then you can do so by subscribing to us in iTunes. Just get yourself iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, find us and subscribe. And if you're feeling really generous, leave us a review. We're only accepting 5-star reviews at the moment. If you want to subscribe to the show in any other way, then you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, and you can find a feed there which you can put into your phone or whatever other listening program that you've got. So that's it for this week. Until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Bernard.
Cheers, Coach.
Cheers, guys.